debate. It's a lost art form, especially in regards to soccer during the internet age. This is why the First 11 exists. The First 11 pits pseudo-soccer journalists against each other in a battle for the ages. Here, the week's arbitrarily named top 11 American soccer issues are laid out. Our panelists pick a side and debate ensues. There are no winners. There are no losers. There are no points awarded. There is just reverently irreverent discourse over primarily ridiculous topics that deserve our discussion, or at least rambling opinions of the otherwise ignored. So prepare to be simultaneously amused and aggrieved. This is the First 11.
All right, everyone, welcome to the First 11 podcast. This is Evan substituting pseudo-hosting duties for Abram today because he is not inebriated, but he's out of it. For sure. So I'd like to welcome everyone. We have a bunch of different interesting things to talk about tonight. So let's go ahead and have Abram introduce the first topic, and we'll just get right into things.
We are jumping in early because of the late hour in the section of the country that I am in right now.
Number one.
So we are in the middle of what I've always referred to as MLS's stupid season. The reason why it's a stupid season: MLS has no real free agency. MLS doesn't really synchronize their schedule so they can deal with any of the transfer windows like most of the world. So statement number one on our First 11 reads as followed: MLS needs to implement free agency in the new CBA because all of its arbitrary drafts are ridiculous.
So if you go back to 2007, when David Beckham first got signed by the league, and then the next year, 2008, a coach was brought in by the name of Ruud Gullit, all-time great player, and in the book The Beckham Experiment, written by Grant Wall, there's this scene where he just doesn't understand what the expansion draft is, and he has this idea that he wants to keep all of his players. He wants whoever's selected to refuse the transfer. He doesn't understand that you can't do that. So I think all these arbitrary rules and drafts and stuff like that do say something for the development of the American coach or the American general manager, in that only players who have played in this league will really actually understand this league can be successful, and a lot of time those are Americans. So from the standpoint of a talent development for our coaches and executives, I think it's good for Americans to I'm having trouble arguing with this. But that's the only thing I've got, Abram. That's the only thing I've got. Tell me why this is a bad idea.
This is a horrendous idea on so many levels. The drafts are beyond arbitrary. They're beyond ridiculous. They're just stupid, which is why I call it the stupid season. There's no need to go out and build your own team because everyone just gets these sort of friendly agreements from the league to improve your team if you're bad enough. Waiver draft. If you're waived, you don't get to pick where you go. Other people have talked long and hard about the idea of players avoiding coming to MLS because they don't get to choose where they go. Same goes for players coming out of college. Same goes for people being waived. If you are waived, you have no contract. You should be able to go to the team that's willing to pay you the most money. All of these drafts are just put in there sort of as a form of collusion in order to keep the salaries low. I understand, and that's sort of where I thought you were going to take your argument, is the idea of keeping salary low, keeping the league afloat, not falling into the version of the original NASL. But at this point in the league, we're going on to the, I believe, 18th. Are we going into the 18th or 19th season next
19th.
Year? We're going into the 19th season next year. Should be at the point where if you say players who have been in the league this long can't get paid less than this, but we're looking at the opposite mode where we're looking at how little can we play players that have been in this league for this long. It's a stupid rule. All of these drafts are stupid, whether it's the waiver draft, whether it's the super draft, whether it's the re-entry draft, whether it's the allocation order. They're all dumb. They're all ridiculous. They're all arbitrary, and they're all pointless.
It's funny because now that you mentioned one of those points that Don Garber did bring up on the halftime show for, I can't remember which game it was. I think it was Kansas City, Houston. He said that the league still isn't profitable. If this is a way to keep, you know, and possibly help the league and each team make a little bit extra money and maybe, you know, spend that money elsewhere where it can contribute to the future profitability of the sport, then I think it's a good thing. Plus, who doesn't like the unintentional comedy of New York Red Bulls not even getting on a conference call? I mean, doesn't that just add value to everyone's lives?
Yeah, it's a hard one to disagree with. And I guess when you bring up the idea of the league not being profitable, that does say something. But I always go back to that argument with just you do have to spend money to make money, and MLS is still in that form where they don't want to spend any money, or maybe not any money, but they want to spend as little money as possible and hope that they can still bring money in.
And then pay Clint Dempsey way too much money.
Number two.
We're going to talk some more Miami soccer. So it just came out in the news recently that the deadline for David Beckham to exercise his $25 million expansion fee option is December 31st of this year. So if something is going to happen, it's going to happen within the next month or so. So number two on the first 11 says David Beckham, who has been flirting with LeBron James, Yo Gotti, apparently a Miami-based rapper, and Carlos Slim believes that his MLS team in Miami is going to need a 75,000-seat Cedar soccer-specific stadium. Number two on the first 11 says Mr. Beckham is clearly on meth.
Based on the size of that stadium, I'm going to have to disagree. If you look back over the amount of people who Miami pulls in to watch soccer games over this course of the season, and I understand that a lot of these are either international friendlies, or in one case, it's the whatever they call that stupid tournament with Chelsea, Real Madrid, LA Galaxy, and AC Milan. I can't think of the name of that stupid tournament. But they had one showing down in Miami, Brazil versus Honduras, 71,124 people. Real Madrid versus Chelsea, 67,273. Yes, I understand no MLS team, sans Seattle, is going to pull that many people on a regular basis. I do get that Miami is a poor sports town, but I do think that if David Beckham is putting a team in Miami, part of the reason is for Major League Soccer. Part of it is to use his international cachet to pull some of these big events into Miami, to get more of these Brazil games, to get more of these Real Madrid games, to get some Manchester United games, perhaps get some AC Milan games or any of the other, you know, I know he hasn't been on a huge amount of teams, but getting some of these teams that he's played on, which are, for the most part, some of the biggest teams in the world. Now, will the stadium most likely have some sort of retractable roof or shrinking roof or tarped off section where for an MLS Miami game it fits maybe, I don't know, 25,000 people? Probably. I like his ambition in asking for a 75K stadium. I do think it may be a little bit over the top, but not to the point where I would accuse him of being on meth. Maybe crack.
Well, he does kind of have a meth face now. Just going to put that out there. I do also like the ambition. I think that I would love to see a team sell out a 75,000 seat stadium at some point in this country on a regular basis for, you know, Miami versus Real Salt Lake. I would love to see that many fans at a stadium, but in Miami, and with it's just in Miami, it's just not going to happen. Were there even, I was watching the Dolphins game today, and there were like maybe a third of the seats full, and that's the Dolphins, and they're a team. So I think they're contending for a playoff spot in the NFL, the most popular sports league in this country. If the most popular sports league in this country can't sell out their 75,000 seat stadium, then how is a soccer team going to do that? The only way I could see this is if David Beckham is bringing a caliber of player to his team that is similar to the caliber that was on showcase in that Brazil versus Honduras game. And I'm not talking about the Honduras team, I'm talking about the Brazil team. And I just don't think it's going to happen in the near future. I think I like the ambition, like you said, but I think he has to be on meth to believe that that's actually going to happen. I'm not even sure this is a real report. I mean, it was reported by the British tabloids or something like that, which British journalism, I'm sorry, but they have way different ethics and standards than journalism in this country. And something like that just doesn't really mean anything. If it's realistic at all to expect that when Miami Dolphins, your NFL team, aren't even filling up their stadium. There are only 8 NFL home games each year, and they can't even fill up all of them. 17 right now, 17 MLS home games. There's no way that a 75,000-seat stadium is ridiculous. I think that David Beckham is totally flying in Walter White. Is that his name from Breaking Bad? I don't know. Bryan Cranston. And just cooking him up some good old stuff. And he is just taking it all in. And clearly, clearly not realistic.
I'd just like to come out and disagree with the fact that you say that there are different ethics and standards for British journalists, because obviously there are no ethics and standards for British journalists. And I think we need to make that clear now.
Okay.
Number three.
We're going to keep with David Beckham, sort of, for number three. If you had been paying attention to Twitter, the internet, anything where you would be if you'd been listening to this, Tim Leiwicki, who is currently, I believe, the president of Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, something along those lines, one of the partial owners of TFC, Tim Leiwicki came out and said that TFC is on the verge of making the biggest signing in MLS history. Keeping that in mind, and keeping in mind the name of David Beckham, number three on our first 11 says, there is no player today that would be a bigger signing than Leiwicki's original biggest signing in MLS history, Mr. David Beckham.
So I completely agree with this, because in my opinion, if, and this isn't going to happen, but if Toronto signed a Messi, a Neymar, or Ronaldo right now, the signing would not be as big as the David Beckham signing still. I mean, the MLS owners basically made a rule so that David Beckham could come over. There was so much fanfare, so much press. People started paying attention to the league. Casual fans started paying attention to the league. People from overseas started paying attention to the league. It put MLS on a map. I don't think anyone can have the same sort of impact from an off-the-field standpoint that David Beckham could. There have been many players who have had a better on-the-field impact, but it's just not the same. And I mean, if you look at the rumors for Toronto FC signings, I believe, are Eto'o, Gilardino, and Jermaine Defoe. No, none of those. If they signed all three of those players, it still wouldn't even be nearly anything near David Beckham signing with MLS. There's no way.
That, I think the main idea here is that off-the-field, those off-the-field things that came with David Beckham. So the idea that he was, and I say this a lot, bigger than soccer. There are people outside of the soccer community who knew who David Beckham were. They knew him as a model. They knew him as Mr. Posh Spice. They knew him from the movie. Actually, the Bend It Like Beckham movie came out, I believe, the same year that he came to MLS, which gave him...
No.
It didn't?
2003, bro.
Did it really? Wow.
I'll look this up.
So, but the idea is, people knew of David Beckham outside of soccer. There are very few players in soccer that someone who's not even a casual sports fan, but just a casual, you know, pop culture aficionado would know. The only player I can think of that would even come close to that is maybe Cristiano Ronaldo. David Beckham is the biggest signing in MLS history because of that. However, if somehow, and it would never happen, or I would be shocked and appalled if it happened, if Leiwicki were able to pry away a Cristiano Ronaldo or a Lionel Messi or a Neymar, it would be a bigger signing for a different reason. These are players in their prime. They're players who would help transform MLS from that retirement league to that competitive league. Do I think that's going to happen? No. But are there players out there who are bigger signing than David Beckham based on the competitive nature of the game and where people want the league to go? Yes. Are there bigger ones as far as maybe getting the PR that you would get from signing a David Beckham? I doubt it. But there could be, hypothetically, and this is completely 100% hypothetically, because I don't believe any of those three players I named would ever sign with MLS. Maybe, best case scenario, you get an Ibrahimovic. I don't think that you can get someone bigger than David Beckham as far as the PR, but I do think you can get someone bigger than David Beckham as far as drawing in soccer fans from America and from around the world.
I sort of agree and disagree with you, but on the maybe a Ronaldo would be able to draw some players in that might be similar to the impact that Beckham would have. But you're mentioning this idea, and I'm going to read you a tweet in a second. You're mentioning this idea that David Beckham was bigger than soccer, and this tweet that I'm going to read you says, by bigger than soccer, I mean people who don't give a single about soccer know him. Do you know who wrote that tweet?
I think it was me.
Yeah, you wrote that tweet. And I just want to tell you, there were so many times my random family members came up to me after David Beckham was signed, and even though they would say stupid like, oh, so is Beckham going to start playing for USA and like stuff like that? The fact was, it was like, random people would come up to me, and it's because they knew that I was like soccer. They would come up to me and ask me what I thought about David Beckham. I don't think the same thing would happen if Cristiano Ronaldo signed here. It's not the same name. It's just he doesn't have the international brand, and no one right now in soccer has the international brand that Beckham does, even Beckham right now, and he has when Beckham's not even playing.
See, I would argue that Ronaldo does have a similar cachet, if not the same, and it's not quite as big as it was in the 2010 World Cup, when he was continuously attached to Paris Hilton. I do remember, at least my wife coming up to me when Portugal was playing and saying, "Ooh, is this a team Cristiano Ronaldo plays on?" And me saying, "Yeah, it is." And her sitting down and watching for 5-6 minutes before getting bored and walking away. So I do think he does have some of that cachet. I'm not sure anyone else is even close to Ronaldo, but yeah. I do agree with you as far as Ronaldo isn't close to where Beckham was when Beckham came into the league in 2007.
Could see Ibrahimovic happening, like you said, though. He's old. He's up there in the years.
I'd kill to see Ibrahimovic in MLS.
Me too. How awesome would that be? Just the things he said, like just the sound bites that we got on a regular basis would be so awesome. It would be like, all right.
For the non-existent folks who actually watch the league anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Number four.
The other day, the MLS MVP finalists were announced. Depending on when you're listening to this, the winner may or may not have already been announced. I think they're going to do it the night before MLS Cup or something like that. That seems like when they're usually going to do it. But the finalists were announced, and they are Marco DeVio of Montreal Impact, Mike McGee of Chicago Fire, who didn't even make the playoffs, and Robbie Keane of the LA Galaxy. Number four on the first 11 says that Tim Cahill should have been with these three or replacing one of those three as an MLS MVP finalist.
All right, I'm disagreeing with this because that's the format of our show. I want people to realize that I do have a vote for MVP, and I did vote for Tim Cahill. My vote
is what? You do?
I do. And have you not read my tweets on getting a media credential for MLS?
Yeah, but wait, can you explain to the listeners and myself how you have a vote for MLS MVP?
I'll explain to you off the air.
Okay.
All right. When you look at what this award is supposed to mean, it's supposed to be the most valuable player for not just a team, but the most valuable player for the league. And if you look at the three people who were nominated, I do find it hard to vote against them, even though I did vote against all three. DeVio and Keane are your bigger name players who both score goals. I mean, Robbie Keane had ridiculous numbers this year. 16 goals, 11 assists. Missing huge chunks of time to go play for Ireland. Marco DeVio had over 20 goals. Mike McGee had over 20 goals. That being said, Tim Cahill had a smaller amount of goals on a team that is arguably better than all three of the teams these men played for. As such, there are things that MLS looks for when they're looking for naming their MVP. They're looking for someone they can sell. You can sell a Robbie Keane. You can sell a Marco DeVio just based on who they were, or even in Keane's case, who they still are internationally. You can sell Mike McGee as the underdog story. You can also sell him based on the fact that you need at least one American in this category. Now, as good as Cahill's season was, and despite the fact that I did vote for him for MVP, I do think it's very hard to force one of those three guys out based on what people look at for their MVP candidate.
Robbie Keane's probably going to win MVP, and that's just because his overall numbers were so good. Marco DeVio, you could also make a pretty good case for him, but for me, it's like the whole, how can Mike McGee make the finalist list for the MVP without actually leading his team to anything? Tim Cahill led the New York Red Bulls to their first trophy ever. He scored important goals in important parts of the season. He had 11 goals all season. Maybe he didn't score as many goals as the other three candidates on the list, but I think he scored more important goals at more important times and led them to their first ever trophy. Who gives a crap if Mike McGee scored 20 whatever goals for a team that didn't make the playoffs. I don't care. It just doesn't matter. Unless something is registering league-wide in terms of the standings, in terms of a trophy, then why does anything Mike McGee did this year matter? Why does anything Mike McGee did this year matter? How can anything he did be considered valuable? What is his team actually would be better off if he had scored fewer goals because they would have had a higher draft pick. At least Tim Cahill's helped this team win a trophy, their first ever trophy.
Yeah, it's that whole Dwayne DeRosario thing. After he won MVP, it just came down to that idea of making the playoffs doesn't matter. And it goes again to that whole idea of it should be a player of the year or, you know, best stats of the year as compared to an overall MVP. Anyway. Yeah. We are heading into our, let me rephrase that. We are mercifully heading into our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking a lot about the lower division, most namely the San Antonio Scorpions, the USL MLS arrangement, and a whole bunch of the most important contests in American soccer history, the College Cup.
Yeah.
I'm on my knees, gotta go to the Lord. Dear Father, I pray to you these things ain't gonna pay for it. All them times that I win, ignored. So what, it wasn't 20, but still I scored. My heart still scorned and my mind is focused. So
welcome back to the First 11 on the AASP Pseudo Network. I really should just add a P in there someplace and call it AASPN, AASPPN. I don't know.
Network with a silent P.
Yeah, kidding. All right, so we're back to talk a little bit of NASL.
Number 5.
We are looking at our favorite team, potential MLS team, San Antonio Scorpions, who just recently named their new head coach in Alan Marcina, whose name I'm sure I just butchered, as I typically do because I don't believe in researching names. regardless of them getting this new coach, and in case people didn't know this, San Antonio spends a good portion of their time and money subsidizing charitable endeavors throughout the San Antonio area. Number 5 on our First 11 reads as follows. San Antonio hiring a new coach will do little to improve their on-field performance since the vast majority of their soccer profits are spent on charitable endeavors.
So, I disagree with this. I mean, I think hiring a new coach, I don't know much about this coach. I don't know much about the team except for that they're highly successful, except for on the field. How can hiring a new coach when you're bad make you worse? That's what I have to say. I mean, it seems like their situation down there, and I really like what they're doing because they're doing a lot of stuff for charity, and I think it's really good, and it probably really helps invest members of the community into the team, make it more of a community thing, and that's what probably the NASL model should be. I just don't see how they can, double negative here, I don't see how they can't improve on their earlier play with this new coach.
Well, here's my issue with them, and I have a bunch of numbers for you.
Okay.
Not this last year where they split the season in half, but back in 2012, they won whatever the NASL calls their regular season. They had the best overall record in the regular season. This, at the end of the season, only 6 of their 23 players from that team came back to the Scorpions. This was not because those players moved up to MLS. This was because of those 6 of 23 players, 14 of them went to other teams. 6 of those went to went to Minnesota United, who was a team who got a new investor who was willing to spend money. If you look at the overall table for this year, you add both the spring and the fall points together, San Antonio is tied with FC Edmonton for the second least points with only 30 over the spring and fall half of the season. I have no problem with teams going out and doing charitable work. I'm a big supporter. I'm in an MPSL supporters group. I'm a big supporter of what people have done in Mississippi with the Mississippi Brilla. If you want to do charity work through your team, you can do that in the NPSL. You can do that in the PDL. NASL has bigger ambitions. San Antonio apparently has MLS ambitions. But if you're spending all of your money that you've earned from, you know, having the highest attendance in a league below MLS, higher than Orlando City, if you're spending that money on charitable donations, at some point, if I'm a supporter of that team, I'm going to be upset at my ownership for hiring a new coach, but not spending that soccer money on retaining players and improving the on-field product.
So, Abram, what you're basically saying is that you want San Antonio to sell out? Because I was thinking about, you claim to be a hipster.
And well, I'm the soccer sellout now. Maybe you missed that.
Oh, you're the soccer sellout now? Then, oh, of course you'd be arguing for this point. I think San Antonio has a great vision, and they're doing a lot of good for their community. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Of course, maybe they won't have the best results on the field all the time, but as long as they're doing more good for the community, then what's the problem with it?
But I think that's part of my problem with it, is if you want to do things for the community, I have no problem. If you look at the Timbers Army do a lot of things for the community in Portland. They put funds back into the community. You can even look as far as what Orlando City has done to try to ingratiate themselves with the people of Orlando. But at the same time, they're still spending a lot of their money back on the on-field product. San Antonio doesn't seem to be spending their money to improve their field product, only to improve their charitable efforts. And there's nothing wrong with trying to improve your charitable efforts so long as you're doing it at the right level. You need to understand what level your team is at. NASL is bigger than MPSL, is bigger than PDL. And I understand I sound like a cold-hearted dickhead, but if you want to spend your money on charity, then do it. Just have your team at the NPSL or PDL level.
You heard it here first. Abram Chamberlain hates charity.
Number six.
Moving on. It was leaked the other day, I believe from some anonymous staffer of the USL Pro, that the LA Galaxy and FC Dallas will field their reserves in the USL Pro next season. Considering that LA Blues and Oklahoma City Energy will debut in the USL Pro, number six on the first 11 says that this is a poor sign for the MLS-USL Pro partnership.
I agree that it's a poor sign. And I wish I had more numbers. In fact, I have no numbers on this one. I just have what I'm referring to as my gut feeling. LA Blues are, you know, as successful as a USL Pro team that's not based in Orlando can be. They've been around for a while. What I see as far as LA fielding their own team instead of trying to form some sort of affiliation with the LA Blues is a lack of trust in the development capacities of the Los Angeles Blues. Truthfully, I don't blame them. If you look at the lack of success that this overall agreement has had so far, they've produced approximately, meaning the USL Pro MLS agreement, one player who's shown any sort of regular contribution to the first team, and that's Dom Dwyer. There have been, if you look at DC United and Richmond Kickers, no one came back from that. In fact, two of the three players who kept getting loaned were waived this last week. New England Revolution, four of the four players that they sent down to Rochester this year were waived. You look over at Philadelphia, two of the four players who they sent down to Harrisburg City Islanders were waived. It doesn't seem that these teams are building. When you look at a team like Los Angeles, who has one of the better academies in MLS, when they show that they do not want, or they apparently, I don't want to say they don't want because I don't know that as a fact, when they apparently don't send their teams or don't appear to want to send their teams to the USL Pro, you have to question whether that agreement's working. The same thing goes for FC Dallas. FC Dallas has a very good academy as well. Oklahoma City is a little bit less than 3 hours away from Frisco, Texas. This is why a lot of people call them FC OKC instead of FCD. They as well are not sending their players off. I think this speaks very poorly on the partnership, and I'm hoping that at some point MLS realizes if you've got a team in your backyard, you should not be fielding a brand new USL Pro team. You should be using the infrastructure that's already there instead of spending your money, since Don Garber says you're not profitable, in trying to field a whole nother team at the third division.
But, and here's my issue with what you're saying. You're mentioning all these numbers about the amount of players who weren't successful and didn't get called back up to the MLS team, but isn't the idea of a development system something that takes time? Of course we weren't going to see dividends the first season from this agreement. You can't just go play 10 USL Pro games and then automatically be ready to set MLS on fire. No, it takes time to develop. You have to have regular playing time, regular training sessions with good players in order to do it. And if I'm SC Dallas and LA Galaxy, why would I trust those two teams? Why would I look out for anyone else other than myself? If I can watch all the players that I have right now and develop them all. And furthermore, they're going to get to play all of their guys rather than just some of them in the USL Pro League next year. I don't see the incentive for LA Galaxy or FC Dallas to form an agreement with an already existing team if they can guarantee that their guys are going to get their minutes under their system, and they're going to be developed the way that they want them to be developed. I mean, there's a reason why Barcelona and Real Madrid have their B teams play in the Spanish second division, I believe it is. I mean, it's a proven success system, and it's something that works. There's absolutely no incentive for FC Dallas or LA Galaxy to do things a different way.
I get that. Immediately speaking, no one outside of Dom Dwyer, who's, what's the term? He's an exception to the rule. There's not a whole lot of people who are going to go down to USL Pro and suddenly come back and score game-winning goals in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's just not going to happen every day. And I understand that we're going to have to wait probably until maybe not even the end of next year, but the end of the year after that to see how the development has worked with some of these players. But if you are looking at the amount of players who are involved in this experiment, quote-unquote, that were waived in the last few days, you do have to start wondering, is this even worth the time or effort of MLS or of these USL teams?
And I think it's going to be. And, you know, I think one of the issues with it is they put the rule into place fairly. It was either right before the season or already during the season this year. And so, you know, a team like DC United is like, oh, we need a partnership. We'll just loan Joseph Nguenya to Richmond. It's like, that's not a real player development move. That's just a move out of necessity to create a partnership. And I think we'll see success next year in and I don't know why this geographically literally makes no sense, but Portland is partnering with Sac Republic FC. I'm actually excited. I'll get to see some Portland reserves close up next year. But I think we'll see dividends in a program like that is starting from, you know, a preemptive. They have time to introduce the players into the system is what I'm trying to say. And I think then it's going to show more results than it has been lately.
Well, if it makes you feel better, there's an even less geographically realistic partnership now happening with the Houston Dynamo and Pittsburgh City Riverhounds.
That's a thing.
Number 7.
Keeping along with development and looking at, again, the most important college tournament in the history of college tournaments, because who cares about the BCS and who cares about March Madness? We got the College Cup happening right now. So as we're looking at the College Cup and we're looking at all these stupid MLS drafts that are in the process of happening, our number 7 on our first 11 says, college soccer is still an important step in America's soccer development.
I completely agree with that, because even though there are a lot more players coming from academies than there were a couple of years ago, a lot of these players are pseudo-academy players, like DeAndre Yedlin. Is he really a Seattle Sounders Academy player? No, he's more an Akron player who happened to have his rights be controlled by Seattle. I think that there are some players who are not ready to jump straight from the pros. And this was actually there was an MLS insider, I believe, that I watched about this, about the New England Revolution Academy system, where, yes, Diego Fagundes, he was ready at 16 to jump right into MLS, but, and I'm forgetting the name.
Scott Caldwell.
Scott Caldwell was not ready, so he went to college. And I think college, while it's not perfect, it's still, you know, a valuable thing to have in place for soccer development. The United States' arguably best player, Clint Dempsey, went to college. Some guys just aren't ready. And furthermore, the whole college experience doesn't just improve you as a soccer player, but it also improves you as a person. It diversifies you. It makes you more educated. You're there not only to play soccer, but you're there to learn. And I don't think that's bad. I think that's very good, and it can help people in their lives, regardless of what they end up doing.
Yeah. I don't think college is necessarily unimportant, but I think the importance of it is getting changed. And you sort of went down the path I was going to head down with this as far as bringing up the Scott Caldwell thing or bringing up the DeAndre Yedlin thing. It used to be in the past that players would have no affiliations with any club going in. And so they'd go to college in hopes of being noticed. What we're getting to right now is the point where players are, in a lot of cases, recognized as club property by the time they go to college. And they're using the college game differently. They've been prepped in academies, they've been prepared in academies, they've been playing in academies for a while. And college is just, as you said, for those kids who aren't quite there, who aren't quite ready yet. I don't think that it's completely unimportant to the American development of the game, but I do think its importance is starting to take a step, back, and I'm not sure it will ever be fully eliminated, but I do think it's going to become less and less.
I agree. It's going to be less and less important in the future, but there will always be a guy like a Sebastian Velasquez. He, though he was not in the NCAA system, he actually played at community college. No one had any idea who he was because the scouting program is not big enough in the United States. If we're too big of a country, there are always going to be players who slip through the cracks, a la Sebastian Velasquez. No one would have found out about him if he didn't play in college, and now he's playing regular minutes for Real Salt Lake, who are an MLS Cup.
Yeah, and you also have CJ Sapong down that same route, who was identified by the DC Academy program, but was not able to be claimed by them for whatever reason.
Number 8.
Bringing up the idea of academies, number 8 on the first 11 says, with academies changing the role of college soccer, there's no purpose to watch the College Cup, unless you're more of a soccer hipster than Abram.
And no one is more of a soccer hipster than me, even though I'm the soccer sellout now. This is odd because it's sort of the opposite road I was going down with the other one. I just want to read a couple names for you. Ready?
Okay.
Zach McMath, Omar Gonzalez, Casey Townsend, Graham Zuzzi, AJ De La Garza, Rodney Wallace, Perry Kitchen, Chris Korb, Darren Maddox, Darlington Nagbe, Ben Spies, Enzo Martinez, Michael Farfan, Stephen McCarthy, Billy Schuler, Zarek Valentin. These are all players who are not academy players that won the College Cup in the last 4 seasons. So there is a reason to watch college soccer, and there is a reason to watch the College Cup. Granted, the names, as we were saying before, it's getting more so younger players are getting linked to academies. But as you look at the College Cup, you are going to find players who are going to become important MLS players, important MLS role players, or in the case of Gonzalez and Zuzzi, you're going to find players who are going to become national team players. Goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where neither of us could, or I couldn't for that fact, really disagree with the way American college is working as far as developing soccer players. The College Cup final, at least, you are going to get the cream of the crop. You are going to get eventual stars. Maybe players should take a few years to get there, but there are reasons to continue watching it, even if it's barely on TV and you have to illegally stream ESPN3 if you're poor like me and don't have cable.
For every Omar Gonzalez, there are 10 Quincy Ameriquois. And that's the problem I have with college soccer. For those of you who don't know, Quincy Ameriquois is a player in MLS. Is he a good player? No. But he was a star at my hometown school, UC Davis. People went to watch him. He scored ridiculous goals, but he was just an athlete. And one of the most telling things I heard, I actually used to work at a pizza place with one of the guys on the UC Davis soccer team. Mind you, a Division I soccer team, the guy still had to get a job. Discussion for another time. He told me that this guy Quincy was the best player on UC Davis, and he didn't even watch soccer. He was apparently has the worst soccer brain ever. The only reason why he's in MLS, he's fast, he can jump high, he has good touch, but he doesn't actually know how to play soccer. So I think that it's for every great player that is in college soccer, there are just so many bad ones. And if I wanted to watch long balls all day, I could go watch the English Premier League.
On that, we're going to go on, take a break. We're going to come back to talk about sexism on Univision. We're going to talk about MLS holiday specials. And we're going to talk about everyone's favorite USL pro player, Dom Dwyer.
Dom Dwyer.
The Dom.
Are you the soccer Dom?
The soccer Dom. Soccer hipsters unite!
From important states like Massachusetts and California to states no one gives a shit about, like New Hampshire and Alabama, a bunch of random guys with varying ratios of fanhood to non-biased journalism gather to talk about soccer, to drink alcoholic beverages, to give each other crap, and most importantly, to wake everyone up to the truth. It's Pick Up Soccer, available on the AASB Network.
Money.
So we are back on the first 11 after a slightly extended break due to some ridiculousness on my part.
Number 9.
Did you, and I want to ask Evan this before we get into it, did you see the photograph that number 9 refers to?
I saw one picture, and what was it, like, they were dressed up as, like, Native Americans?
Yeah, from what I could tell, this was on a very, very popular Univision show called República Deportiva, which is a sports talk show for the most part. It was these shall we say, scantily clad ladies carrying the MLS Cup while dressed as, for the most part, I guess, American Indians. I'm not really sure what it was all about, just that they were very, very nice-looking ladies in very minimal amounts.
Have you ever seen a lady who wasn't nice-looking on the Spanish channel? I mean, like, seriously, every single girl is hot on the Spanish channel.
Yeah, that's about how it works. That's how it should work. That's why I married a Puerto Rican. Anyway, number 9 on our first 11 reads as follows. Instead of worrying about scantily clad women touching their oh-so-precious MLS Cup, I added that part in, MLS supporters should be happy that Univision's República Deportiva has given their stupid championship trophy airtime. I editorialized that one a little bit.
So, Abram, what year is it?
I believe it's 2013, almost 2014.
Okay, exactly. When aren't we past the whole, like, objectifying women thing? I mean, that's still a thing. I did mention that I was going to bring this up to you. I guess you could say my pseudo thesis in college was, pseudo, as Abram does the quotation marks. I wrote a really long paper for a history of mass media class, and I looked at every single film from the James Bond film franchise and analyzed the portrayal of women in that franchise. It started in 1960, so we're on 62, so we're on 51 years now. Examined the portrayal of women in that film and compared it to society at the time. This sort of thing that happened is something I would have expected from the 60s, maybe the 70s. Why do we still have women who are just paid look nice? I mean, it's like they aren't even people. They're being paid to stand there, right, because of the way they look, and then that's it. We're meant to think of them as objects, and that is it for me. For that to be associated with MLS, that is taking away from MLS, because it's saying that, you know, the only thing that these people are worth are their looks. Right, and we don't want MLS to be like that. We want MLS to be more than that. MLS can do better. MLS should have made sure that the hosts of this show weren't going to do something like this before they loaned out their trophy, which, by the way, I think is amazing looking, the trophy.
All right, so let me ask you something with all these James Bond things.
Okay.
Were the women portrayed as sexy?
For the most part, yes.
Okay, I'm just checking. I just wanted to say sexy. All right. Let's. I do get what you're saying to a point, but I do think that the whole entire argument is just a wee bit ridiculous. Let's look at just for a second. Do you remember what the last MLS Cup ratings were, approximately?
I'm sure it was not. It was below a 1.0.
Yeah, it was. Their rating was a 0.7.
That's better than I would have expected.
Approximately 700,000. Year before that, it was 0.8, which is, again, about 800,000. Do you know what República Deportiva averages per day, and it's a daily show? How many people watch that show?
No, I'm sure it's a lot, though.
Yeah, approximately each day, and this is a 5 times a week show, it gets 1.06 million people a day watching it.
Okay.
Every day.
So
more than MLS Cup. And the people at MLS, the fans of MLS Cup, should be giddy that the trophy is getting out there and that people are talking about it, even if it's got half-naked people. If Larry Flynn offered to put the MLS Cup as a front page of Hustler magazine, they should be dancing with joy. Forget about crossing the line just for a second. Just for a second. And think about the idea of maybe, just maybe, getting back to the numbers where we had in 1996, where it was 1.4 million people watching the MLS Cup final. Those numbers aren't there. If you have to put it on a show with scantily clad women, who, scantily clad, yes. Objectified, absolutely. Do I have a problem with that? A little bit. But for the most part, let's get the trophy out there. Let's let people know that it exists. And let's put aside all of this, these sexy ladies. And remember that at the end of the game, at the end of the day, you still got MMA, you still got UFC women walking around with fight cards every single day, more scantily clad than any of these two ladies were.
But why did the show have to do it with the hot girls? I mean,
next time they use two fatties.
What?
Next time they can use two fatties.
Why couldn't they have had just anyone in a regular looking things bring it out? I mean, why is MLS marginalizing the values of their league just to showcase the product? MLS should want the attention that it has garnered from that. They should not want the attention in the manner that it was provided. I think, and I mentioned selling out earlier today, but MLS is selling out its values. MLS cannot run a Don't Cross the Line campaign and do this thing that they did on that show. I know I'm using too many pronouns right there, but it just completely contradicts itself, in my opinion.
Yeah, and let me be perfectly honest and come out and say with that again, I want to go with the fact that I do agree with Evan, but I feel like they should get we should see this from the other side, which is that point that you've got a show with bigger ratings that's just as old as MLS. MLS does need to cut some quarters, not the term I'm looking for, but MLS does need to cut some deals with the devil in order to get out there into a bigger audience. And going to an audience which is bigger than their MLS Cup finals, sometimes you do have to sell your soul to the devil. And no, I'm not calling Univision the devil.
Yeah, well, I guess it's going to be a necessary evil for us to look at scantily clad women.
And, yeah, I know. We'll do what we have to do for the good of the league.
Number 10.
Every major sports league in this country, it seems like, has their own holiday which they have games on. The NBA has their Christmas game. The NFL has their Thanksgiving games. MLB has 4th of July. MLS does not necessarily have a specific day that people play on. Number 10 in the first 11, suggested by listener Daspro at RedBJB, says that MLS needs to pick a holiday to play on.
I disagree with this. What holiday are we going to go with? Are we going to go with Memorial Veterans Day? Because no one is home on that Monday. And everyone's cooking out on the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We're going to go with the day after Thanksgiving. That's the day of the a lot of BCS games. That's the day of the Iron Bowl. It's also Black Friday. That's basically suicide. What else is there? Christmas? Taken. 4th of July? Taken. Columbus Day? Not important enough, and too many people are out buying used cars. The idea is get your TV ratings up to a 1.0. I'm not even asking for, what is the NBA average? NBA average is around 2.7 for a game. So get up to a 1.0. Forget 1.0. Get up to a 0.5 on a regular basis. Get your local television markets up to about that level, and then consider looking at a holiday. But you can't just pick a holiday and say, this is going to be the day. We're going to do it on Veterans Day. Veterans Day is going to be the big MLS game. All the good holidays are taken. You're looking at sloppy seconds, or you're looking at leftovers. And that's not the way to handle it.
You're forgetting. We need to have our MLS Valentine's Day season openers. Make the season longer. Get more loving in. Love your MLS. How is that not a slogan that can be used? Valentine's Day MLS openers. Jot it down. How many MLS fans do you think don't have dates? I know I don't on Valentine's Day ever. So I would watch tons and tons of MLS, and it wouldn't make me feel so bad when I sat alone at home by myself on Valentine's Day. I totally think that MLS should do this. And it could be very feasible, especially if we're going to move to a balanced schedule and have upwards of 40 games.
All right, let's CC this at the Soccer Don.
Number 11.
Speaking of the Soccer Dom, we're about to talk about the Soccer Dom.
Which is the name of the movie. Dom Dwyer, I'm fascinated by this story, as everyone else should. This is a guy who went down to USL Pro, more or less became a superstar for Orlando City, then came back for Sporting Kansas City and hit the essentially game-winning. I don't know, it was the series-clinching goal to send them to their first final in God knows how long. Obviously,
9 years.
Obviously, what American soccer needs, and I've written about this several times on Soccer Newsday. I wrote about this several times on Viva La Football when that was still going. But American soccer needs a movie. It needs a movie we can all get behind. It needs a movie that's optioned by the Disney Corporation. Domed Wire's year. Let's go with super successful year. Splitting time between USL Pro Orlando City and MLS's Sporting Kansas City should become a Disney option movie.
I completely agree with this. We do, American soccer does need a movie, and not a movie in which Joe Gaetans is portrayed to practice voodoo, which he completely didn't do and completely is a legitimate religion. Anyway, how perfect is this? Especially if Disney options it. Orlando is where Disney World is. They I think Orlando City even practices at like the Disney Sports Complex or something like this. This
Worldwide is just, of this sports.
Too good to not be true. The only thing that we're waiting on is who's going to play Dom Dwyer.
See, I'm not even worried about Dom Dwyer, but what you're going to have is you need to have like Michael B. Jordan playing the part of CJ Sapong, who in this fictionalized account is going to be the mean, overhyped guy that played for Sporting Kansas City and then gets sent down to Orlando City after Dom Dwyer does well enough. So everyone's going, oh, look at the bully getting sent down to the lower division now. And our hero is doing so well, he's going back up to the top league. And then they both combine in the championship game because they're friends now. It's already written.
But CJ Sapong isn't an
But this is a fictionalized version.
But how would
I don't care that CJ Sapong is awesome.
And who plays Peter Vermees in this situation? Is it
Kiefer Sutherland?
Kiefer Sutherland's way too old to be Peter Vermees, though he does already have the history of the
drinking.
Questionable. Well, I was gonna try and word it in a more politically.
How about
Charlie way.
Sheen? Charlie Sheen, give us your keys.
Charlie Sheen? You mean Carlos Estevez?
I see this Dom Dwyer movie as like a legitimate thing. I for years have been trying to think of ways to shove an American soccer movie out. Think about it for a second. Guy from England comes over to camp, you make it in England, plays college soccer, drafted, not getting any time, sent to the lower team, the scrappy team in Orlando, does well enough to come up back to the first league, hits the game-tying goal, which I must have said at least 15 times, our game-winning goal, series-winning goal. If Sporting Kansas City wins or loses, it needs to happen. It needs to happen. Disney needs to get on this immediately.
So let's write the screenplay, Abram, and we won't have to make all of our money off of this podcast.
Yeah, because we're paid so well for it.
Yeah.
Damn network exactly. Executives.
Yes. We get paid all of the money. All of the money that goes to the show goes directly to us.
Actually, I believe it goes mostly to Hank.
No, it all goes to Hank.
It goes to Hank.
Hank owns our rights.
It does.
Our personas.
So we at this point are, so we're both agreeing on that one. On this one, we are going to move to our reserves. We have a very short reserve list today. Just agree or disagree. First one was from @RevsGunner. He says, Brad Guzan will start over Tim Howard in Brazil.
Don't think he will, but maybe he should. Although Tim Howard's beard is amazing.
Tim Howard's beard is the greatest beard in the history of American soccer, even better than Sasha Kljestan's mustache.
It's the greatest beard in the history of the Taliban. I mean, let's be honest.
It's the greatest beard possibly in the history of the world, so I'm going to have to disagree with that, although I agree with you in the sense that maybe he should be. We've also got @soccer_engineer, which is Anthony Jennings, asking us for our MLS Cup final predictions.
2-1 Real Salt Lake. Ja Plata does something.
See, and I'm saying 1-0 Sporting Kansas City off a Dom Dwyer goal in the 92nd minute.
So that way, then
it will help the movie.
It's
going to be Landon Donovan-esque.
Landon Donovan-esque.
You got anything to plug this week?
I haven't plugged them in a while, but I'd like to plug the Midnight Ride podcast. And that's TMR, @TMR podcast, which can mean two different podcasts now, I believe, if Seth gets on board. So I'd like to plug them. I'd like to plug myself @EvanReem. I just wrote an article. This isn't a joke. Everyone's going to think this is a joke. But I just wrote an article about a woman who is trying to raise money for sustainable farms in Kenya. So that should be up. You're looking at me really weird, but it was a weird assignment. It was a weird couple of hours, but I wrote the article, and it's going to be up on Wednesday of this week, and I'll link to it on Twitter so that everyone can see if they want to go help out our cause. Abram, what about you?
All right. Obviously, got to plug our pseudo network, which is at the AASP. Go ahead and like us on Facebook. You're liking the overall pseudo network. It's just facebook.com/AllAmericanSoccerPod. If you do not subscribe to us on iTunes, which most people probably don't, go ahead and subscribe to us on iTunes. It's under the All American Soccer Podcast. Give us a rating or review. We're trying to get up to 20 reviews. We're at 13 right now. That's only 7 more to go. I don't care if it's a 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. All right, go ahead, follow the show. Follow me. I'm at Mind of Abram. Go ahead, follow the show at First 11 Pod. We will be back next week, maybe or maybe not, depending on where exactly in the world we are. Again, this is the First 11 on the AASP Pseudo Network. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
One last plug. Benny Failhaber's mustache. I'd like to plug that mustache. Did you see that ball? Ooh, Benny Failhaber can be the villain in the movie if you want. You can write the screenplay to negatively affect Benny Failhaber.
Have a happy Thanksgiving, folks. Yeah, we're gonna keep that in too. All right.